Welcome to this lunch session at the library. And today we have the pleasure of welcoming a special guest who has come all the way from Switzerland. Dr. Kaspar Staub is a guest researcher at PANSOC, the Center for Research on Pandemics and Society, this week. Staub is a historian and epidemiologist at Merck's at the University of Zurich. In this session, he will talk about excess mortality in Switzerland and other countries during COVID-19 and past pandemics. Please, Dr. Staub.
Thank you very much for this kind introduction and the opportunity to speak about excess mortality here today. In the audience, there are also other experts on past and present pandemics, so I'm keen to know if they see the things the same way I do or if there are differences. So we hopefully will have a lively discussion afterwards. You know, I'm looking forward to all kinds of comments and questions. So this is to start. We are now approaching a phase of the pandemic where it's about to see beyond a little bit what happened in the past, let's say, two and a little bit more years. And one of the questions usually coming up is, how do you measure the impact of a pandemic on a society? And we have been reminded over the past 2 years, and we just had forgotten that, that these influences on a society are very diverse and complexly linked as well. So this is a complex thing. But one of the possible ways and influences is maybe the most definitive one. It's of all influences, it's the number of victims you can count of pandemic. And I don't know how that was exactly here in Norway, but in Switzerland actually, and other countries which were hard hit by the pandemic in some of the phases actually, relation with the numbers, you know, really got lost along the pandemic. So there were people working against that. And this is the example from the main place in Bern, the capital of Switzerland, where they put candles for each of the victims, actually in February 2021, that was, after the really harsh second wave with 11,000 victims. Now we are up to 15,000 victims already. But this is how they did it in Switzerland. So there are people actively working against losing that connection with large numbers. And I think the New York Times did really a great job in terms of data visualization. Maybe you have seen that on Twitter, social media or whatever. So they really tried also to work against that. And they basically designed three title pages along the pandemic. Maybe there were more, but these were the three I saw. This was the first one from 2020 May, so really early in the pandemic, where they put names of victims, 100,000 was it back then, on the title page to really show these are people actually we are talking about. And then you see 2021 February, maybe a little bit a year later, they tried it again to visualize it. And they did it this way because it's now no longer possible with 500,000 victims to basically, you know, go with names, so you'd go with data points. And this was most recently, I guess, two or three or whatever days ago. Now we are up to 1 million victims in the US in May 2022, and they again try to visualize it somehow. And, you know, we in the US, they now surpassed the estimated absolute victim number from the Spanish flu, which was estimated to be 675,000 or so, and now it's 1 million. So we surpassed that in the US with absolute numbers, but not yet, of course, in relative numbers. We are half the way now, approximately, because, of course, population size changed so dramatically that this is important to keep in mind. But it's really, it was striking to see how people in hard-hit countries try to remind somehow other people of, you know, the numbers of victims somehow. There are different ways to do that. So the problem with just counting deaths from COVID-19 is actually that this depends accurately coded causes of deaths, right? So you need to know exactly who died of COVID. This might differ from country to country, even from hospital to hospital, and where the people died. So this is really complex. And you also have the problem of missing death in official statistics. So we have a lag also there. So with statistical offices really cleaning the data for years sometimes until you exactly know who died from what. And one way out to overcome one of the other limitations of just counting deaths by COVID is actually to go for the overall mortality impact of a pandemic. And there you usually use the concept of excess mortality. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And what does that really mean? It's basically counting deaths from all causes, usually, compared to what would be expected under normal counterfactual circumstances, you know, in normal times. And usually you go for the 5 years prior to the event, you do kind of modeling, whatever. So you can't calculate an expected value, and then you compare the observed values to the expected values, and maybe you then end up, you know, with excess mortality estimations. Huh? And with excess mortality, it doesn't actually matter how exactly causes of deaths are recorded across time, across countries. So you can then start to compare countries or regions or whatever, and it captures also the net outcome by including deaths from other causes attributed to the pandemic, not only COVID deaths, and maybe also the negative things. So if you missed a flu season or whatever. Huh? So there you have under-mortality for some causes. That also goes into, or accidents or whatever due to restrictions and lockdowns. So you have less accidents maybe. So this is also going into excess mortality then. So this is important to have in mind when we talk about that concept. And just recently, the WHO now also used excess mortality to estimate the real death toll of the pandemic worldwide. Huh? So this was just very recently, May 2022. Somewhere it's written, we used excess mortality. The WHO published a report on that. And Nature, so the top journal, one of the top scientific journals, covered it in a news article. And you hear, sorry for the bad graph here or bad picture, but here you see in blue the officially reported deaths worldwide, and you see here some estimations what the real death toll would be from the pandemic, and you see it's really higher, of course, and there are different estimations, and they end up kind of on a similar level, all the three. So this was just recently, and probably we will never have a precise estimate how many people now really died of COVID or from COVID or you know, the consequences from it or whatever. And this reminds me a little bit of the discussion which is going on in the about the 1918 pandemic as well, because there, even 100 years later, we are still, you know, discussing and estimating the range, how many people died from the Spanish flu, and the range is quite amazingly large now, 20 to 100 millions or so. So maybe we will be a little bit more precise about COVID in the future, but this is also something about pandemics. We never know exactly how many people really died of it. And this was somehow really amazing to me to see when I started to work with excess mortality, that there is really no gold standard to really calculate that. So this was amazing because there are so many statistical offices or data, basically data pools you can access to get your data from. And it was also really interesting to me and to see reporting really plays a big role, and there's really no gold standard how to calculate that. And this is just, again, a really recent piece from German researchers, which showed if you do a sensitivity analysis about how you calculate excess mortality, then you see exactly it's really making a difference how you do that. So there's really no gold standard to really do that. It really depends which years you actually take as the expected values. So they did that here for several countries using human mortality database data. So this is just one of those databases which can access for that. And they basically show here that these numbers of excess mortality, they vary quite a bit, depending on if you calculate your excess, your expected values based on the 2 or 3 years before, the 5 years before, or even the 10 years before. Huh? And you see here Norway, you did well in terms of excess mortality, so almost nothing, depending on how you calculate it or whatever. But you also see these points here, they differ quite a bit. Huh? This is Switzerland, we did not so well. So excess is here a little bit higher, of course. And you see again, these points, they vary depending on how you calculate it. And this is just one of the variables in an equation where you can put in some variation. Huh? The other variables which go into that calculation also matter a lot. And these authors here from Germany, they basically also coded a Shiny app. This is an interactive app on the internet where you can basically play around with those parameters. And this is just the Norway data. So they access the human mortality database, and it's interactive. You can access it via the net. Huh? You basically choose here Norway. You go for 2020. You could also do that for 2021 or whatever. Then change, basically choose the outcome variable. You can also display it for males and females or whatever. You can play around a little bit with the time, and you see how that varies. Huh? So this is now Norway 2020. You see basically no excess mortality in that year in Norway. Huh? So you did well. And this is the Swiss example. Huh? So y-axis changed now a bit. Huh? You see here we are now on a different level, and we really had two really harsh waves. Huh? The second one was really devastating. So really, I recommend that tool to play around a little bit to see how excess mortality behaves when you change these parameters. Huh? But I have to say, by playing around, you see how the details maybe change a little bit, huh? But the conclusion roughly stays the same. Huh? So Norway did well, Switzerland did not so well, so it's about the details here. So, but if just to remind you, if you see excess mortality calculations like percentages or whatever, keep in mind that these things highly depend on the method you choose and how you calculate it. So there might be a variety to do that. Huh? And of course, it's not really a new concept, huh? Excess mortality, or if comparing an expected value versus an observed value. This has been done already in the 1830s by demographers, looking at the seasonality of deaths by month. So they compared normal years versus a new year, showing does it really behave in the same way as it should be. Huh? And the concept of excess mortality, I guess, has been applied to a pandemic the first time, I guess, in the 1890 Russian flu or after it. This is an example from Swiss authorities where they put the 1819 monthly deaths against what happened before and after. So this is also, again, an application of that concept. So this is not a new concept at all. Huh? And of course, I could now show you plenty of examples, applications to past pandemics as well. Huh? So we saw already the current pandemic application and past pandemics. So this is all pre-COVID-19 research. And you see here one of the famous papers about the global mortality impact of the 57 influenza pandemic. And this is now, you see how, which country was affected the most in terms of excess deaths. This is one of the more famous examples about the mortality burden of the 1918 pandemic in Europe, most of the European countries. And you see here again, an extraction from that graph, basically showing Norway again. Huh? And here is Switzerland. Huh? You can't read it, sorry for that, but that would be Switzerland. Huh? So it's again comparing the two the countries. So this is the 1918-1919 application to European countries. And you could go down another level, within countries and looking for regional differences. For instance, in Spain, this is a paper on Spanish data, 1918 influenza pandemic. And basically you see again, which regions were hit the hardest in terms of excess deaths. And I guess you could go down even more levels, you know, to individual subgroups of population, socioeconomic groups, or even vulnerable groups and things like that. So it's really, you can do that on various levels, various pandemics. So that concept can be broadly applied. Huh? Now, what we did here is basically, this is our contribution. We really wanted to do a historical contextualization of COVID-19 from a long-term perspective. And this is a collaboration with epidemiologists at the University of Bern, who really did the modeling, which was complex here. So without their help, that wouldn't have been possible. And people from Oslo here are also part of that publication of the team. And that was the aim. So what we were going for, we were looking for countries which have 100 plus years of continuous mortality monitoring data. And this had to be countries which had no involvement in and major losses during world wars, because you have problems calculating excess mortality if an event is going on for multiple years. So usually that plays a difference. So we excluded countries which were heavily involved in world wars. No large territorial shifts, and of course we have kind of a north-south gradient here a bit with a Scandinavian country, here it is, and then of course South Europe and Switzerland, Central Europe. So we did calculate excess mortality based on monthly data over 100 years for these three countries, and this is the aggregation for years now. And you see as expressed as a relative excess deaths, so percentages, compared to what happened in the 5 years before, you end up with COVID for 2020 only. Switzerland, roughly 12% excess mortality. Spain was hit harsher, 17% roughly. And Sweden, the lowest, 8%. And if you compare that to the previous pandemics, you see 1957, almost nothing. And the confidence intervals show it, so it's not significant, actually. And then really, 1918, still really a different thing. For that 1 year, 1918, so the percentages of excess mortality are really huge here. Spain, again, hits the harshest. And for Switzerland, you can even compare 2020 here, 12%, with 6% in 1819 Russian flu. So it depends on the measure you look at. But for Switzerland, we really reached or surpassed the Russian flu now. For 2020 only. And this is one of the main graphs. And here you see the monthly spikes of excess mortality across the full series of excess deaths. And you see that the largest spikes in 2020, that for Switzerland, that would be in the fall somewhere. You see that these largest spikes here, monthly spikes, really surpassed everything which was after 1918, almost everything. And of course, January 1819 was still really high, but this is a historical event in Switzerland and also in the other countries. Please note again that when we zoom in now into the single pandemics, you see here the Russian flu, then here the Spanish flu, here the 57 pandemic, and this is COVID. Keep in mind that Spain really has a different y-axis again here, because the Spanish flu, the impact of the Spanish flu was so strong here in Spain that you couldn't compare that with the y-axis here. So this is why the COVID peak here for Spain seems a little bit lower than compared to the other countries, but that's a matter of y-axis here. So keep that in mind. And what we really can show here is fall 2021 in Switzerland, really the strongest excess mortality since 1918, again, if you zoom in. So this was really a historical event in that country. But of course, it's always important to not only show the similarities between pandemics, but maybe also the differences. So in 1918, it's important to emphasize that 1918 is still a different dimension, not only in magnitude, but also with age patterns, which age patterns or age groups were affected the most. And of course, this is still an amazing special feature of the 1918 pandemic, that young people were really affected over more as they should usually in other pandemics. Of course, this has limitations of what we did here. So with calculating excess mortality, especially when it goes in the nearer present, you always have to keep in mind that the most recent data you extract from these databases, they are provisional. So these statistical offices, they keep on working on those data, and maybe if you would extract the same data now again for 2021 or so, it would change a little bit, but not the conclusion, I would assume, but the details maybe a little bit. Of course, we can speak about completeness of vital statistics, death state statistics in the 19th century. But in the literature, usually people say that 20th century data, there you should be fine. So the quality should be there. Of course, we are comparing here very diverse populations. As I said, it's a huge variety in terms of methods applied to excess deaths, excess mortality. And then still a puzzle, maybe we can come back to that later, that it seems to be the case across pandemics that Southern European countries are usually hit a little bit harder than Northern European countries. So where is that coming from? And I haven't seen in the literature really a convincing explanation for that. Maybe it's about timing, who gets affected first. That plays a role, maybe other factors. So, but this is, you can see that across pandemics, that there seems to be a north-south gradient within Europe, at least. And of course, for Spain, it was really hard to grasp exactly the impact of the Spanish Civil War, because that also was an event over several years, and it's really hard to really do exact estimations there. So this is a limitation to keep in mind as well. So what we do in Switzerland, we now go beyond that a little bit in ongoing projects with epidemiologists from the University of Geneva. We digitized annual death counts and population size per district in Switzerland with book scanners and methods to extract numbers and people doing the quality checks. So we really try to build up new data right now. To have a closer look within that country, Switzerland. And what we do is then we estimate annual excess mortality on a district level within Switzerland for three pandemic years, 1819, the Russian flu, 1918, the so-called Spanish flu, and then 2020. This is data we got from the Federal Office of Statistics because we collaborate with them. And what you can see is basically, of course, Spanish flu, 1918 pandemic, still, the numbers of excess mortality in terms of percentage really, and we can do that, sorry, I forgot to mention it, we can do that for age and sex groups. So it's really, we can basically approach that in details, but only on an annual level. But you see then still this, the 1918 pandemic having a huge impact and a stronger impact, of course, than the other two. But what you also see is there were in each of the pandemic specific areas within Switzerland which were hit harder than others. And what we now try to do is to explain that a little bit for the historical pandemics. We go for which district had a railway station, for instance, or how many, so accessibility. We go for other socio-demographic parameters which could help us explain a little bit what we see here, or how many tuberculosis deaths were before the pandemic year we had in those districts, to see a little bit talk about comorbidities or things like that. And for the modern data, we also have something like area-based socioeconomic position for that district. And this is, again, something which comes up in many, many, many pandemics again and again, that actually disadvantaged regions socioeconomically get hit harder in pandemics in terms of excess mortality and other outcomes as well, of course, but here we show it for excess mortality. And this also comes up significantly in Switzerland here for the COVID pandemic year 2020. So this is something to certainly follow up. And now to the last two slides. So I'm coming back to the beginning, to the first slide a little bit. So I'm fully aware that, of course, pandemics are not only about deaths. So this is one outcome, maybe the most definite one, but it's one outcome. But the impact goes far beyond. There are direct effects, there are indirect effects. Of course, particularly now with long COVID as well, quality of life and disability, premature deaths, which are not really covered in excess deaths. And of course, if you go then on topics like mental health or the occupational world or education or whatever, so you find impacts on various levels. And this is again, was a comment in Nature. This was already in 2021, I guess mid-2021, when they started to realize this will be a huge topic in the future. This is a complex graph. I find it amazing, but it shows you again, this of course changes, you know, across the age strata, how you are affected and many other stratas as well, and how exactly you are affected. And I assume that in the coming years, decades or whatever, you will find hundreds of studies in the scientific world which go into that area of research, assessing the impact of the pandemic now on various levels. But I, you know, I'm keen to see a little bit also if that debate then also goes on beyond the scientific world, you know, in the policy-making authorities or even in the public. We will see what happens there. And this is again from Nature, just recently, February 2022, when there was a great comment about setting the agenda in research, where again, actually we should know that they say in the title already that pandemics disable people. So it's beyond death, the impact. So this is known from other infectious diseases, influenza, polio, that have shown that infections can change lives even decades later. So that will go on, and people in the scientific world at least are aware that this will be a research topic in the coming years, again. But we should know from previous pandemics that that is usually the case, right? And this brings me back, last slide, a little bit to past pandemics. Because you find that, of course, I'm 100% sure you find that also for Norway, but these are two Swiss examples where the authorities wrote reports after the pandemics, the Russian flu 1918 and then also 1918 Spanish flu, where they basically tried to understand what happened, and they asked physicians but also the public, what happened, how do you see it, please report and whatever. And in each of those reports, you also find the mentioning of basically convalescence being really slow after being affected to the virus. And this is the 1819 example showing there was slow or incomplete convalescence of many persons, even after mild cases, they report here. Or here they say for after the Spanish flu, they say mild cases, it was often convalescence was often despairingly slow, people suffered from general weakness and so on. So really, again, many things we are discussing right now, again, after COVID. We just have forgotten all those things a little bit. So that was it. Thanks so much for your attention, and I'm looking forward to questions and the discussions.
Thank you so much, Kasper, for a great talk. I have one comment. And in Norwegian, we have this saying, som du måler, får du svar. As you measure, you get your conclusion or your answer. So I'm thinking here, looking at Norway, you show that we had no excess mortality in Norway. But that doesn't mean that we didn't have deaths from or with COVID, right? So I think when measuring the disease burden from pandemics, we need to use several measures. Excess mortality from all causes, but also we need to look at the absolute number of people dying from or with COVID and look at crude death rates as well.
Certainly you're right that actually that it makes a huge difference from where, which country you are actually coming from, right? So, and now maybe Norway is one of those countries, as you said, where excess death was not so a huge topic. But if you would count those countries being affected from that measure, actually, in such a low manner, you don't end up with many countries on the world, right, which somehow are in that group. So it's a special situation somehow to speak about excess deaths in such a country, right? Because coming from Switzerland and the situation we have there, it is a huge topic, right? And also from the US, I assume, or other countries. So it's really special to speak about that in a country which is not really so much affected if you look at that measure. But I agree, it's so important to go beyond that, yes. And maybe combine those measures somehow. We will see if some good indicators or proxies or whatever or indexes come up to basically sum all these various kinds of influences in a good way that somehow shows also for countries like you here in Norway that there was an impact, but not just so much in excess mortality. So we will see.
Thank you for a great presentation. I love the graphs too. In terms of the excess mortality in Norway, there are some groups that are they are very strongly in the media now saying that, oh, so we didn't have any excess mortality, and what was this all this fuss about, you know? And I think it's so useful to try to share some of these graphs that are more global with these groups of people who are very strongly in some media channels.
Yeah, we'll be there in a second. I agree on that, because even in Switzerland, where it's actually undebatable that we have had, you saw the really fatal fall wave, right? So it's undebatable somehow. But even if you want to use excess mortality in a political way, you can calculate your own numbers, right? And you can basically downplay that a little bit. So this is maybe one of the downsides of these methods a bit, right? That it really plays a role how you calculate your expected, if you incorporate in your observed values or expected values also the first month before the pandemic. And so this, that you can really play around with those numbers in a political way as well. So yeah. And also newspapers now doing their own graphs with all own calculations about excess mortality. So there's a big debate going on too. But the conclusion, at least for Switzerland, hopefully remains, right? That the fall wave was really, that was devastating what was going on there.
Right. My question or comment is mostly you referred when it comes to accounting for excess mortality. And then I wanted to mention, I come from the Dominican Republic, for instance, where the pandemic was not too dramatic, but still it was. And I think that in a country like mine, where the death because of traffic accidents is like a second or third in importance, for sure, as a result of the lockdown, as you mentioned, that cause of death was significantly reduced, because the lockdown and my country was very seriously taken, and there was even curfew imposed and all that. So I assume that there was a lot of less death for traffic that were, when counting the excess mortality, was to be deducted from that figure, and therefore, the death of the due to COVID were much more important to be accounted for, and that said, well, the statistics that we usually saw about the country was from this Johns Hopkins or Worldometer, which is, as I say, didn't have much to do with what was reported every day in the newspapers about people seriously in serious condition hospitalized, or the ones that were dead because of COVID. So I guess this is really an important factor to take into account. Thank you.
I fully agree on what you say, and you know, proper statistics usually take time. So that is what is happening right now in Switzerland. So everybody is waiting now. People in the public health field and so on, and a little bit beyond, are waiting right now for the Federal Office of Statistics in Switzerland to really publish the proper causes of death statistic from the year 2020. And so that took so long to go through each of the death records individually in Switzerland, and they paid a lot of attention to detail right now, because they know it's politically loaded. What they will publish, everybody is expecting to happen in, you know, to be published in August or so, so that we know then in more detail who died from which cause in 2020 only. Huh? And for the following years, you have then again to wait for another two or whatever years to have a little bit more information on what happened with the other causes, right? So what we see in Switzerland actually is we have a little bit of an under-mortality. Here you can see it, maybe it's a tiny, huh? The orange line goes beyond the green line here. In the first month of 2020, one after the harsh fall wave 2020, and everybody was expecting that somehow, because that's a common feature in pandemics and also flu waves or whatever, that you have a slight under mortality, you know, following these pandemics. Of course, this is what was happening a little bit, you know, in the first month of 2021, and there were people saying, "Ooh." Yeah, that points towards the possibility that just in that fall wave, people died a little bit earlier, you know, they would have died anyway later. So this is this discussion. But actually, public health experts and so in Switzerland, they say the cause for that under-mortality in the first month of 2021 was actually not that. It's not that mortality harvesting phenomenon, that's the name of it. But it's another one. It's actually the seasonal influenza wave, which was totally left out in January or February or March 2021. So that's causing that under-mortality here. Huh? So coming back to your comment, we will, at least for the case of Switzerland, we will only know a little bit more now when the causes of death statistic for those previous years now is then be published in more detail. And even then, you know, it's so challenging to disentangle these causes of death. So this is really a challenging area in demographics, I guess. But other people might know more about that than I do.
So I was thinking about the ways that people talk about dying of COVID or with COVID or from COVID, and how that could be either underreporting or overreporting the actual impact. And then looking at the last couple of slides about long COVID, for example, we have potential deaths or impacts from the pandemic many years later. For example, if people miss their cancer screenings or increased obesity or mental health impacts. So if we did some kind of excess mortality for those causes later, can we then also kind of add that back onto the impact of the pandemic? And not that there's necessarily a good answer for this, but what would be good ways of thinking about that?
Oh, no, I don't have one, no. But I guess that's one of the major challenges, right? To disentangle the short-term effects from the medium and long-term effects on various levels, you know, over so many possible causes of deaths. And we are only speaking about deaths right now, so it gets more complicated when it's about living with chronic diseases or whatever. So, yeah, I don't have a good answer here. Just to say it's really challenging to disentangle that, yeah.